basic problem we talked about in terms of Shehiyah is leaving food on the fire as Shabbos has begun, or Shabbos begins, which already started to cook, and is not yet half cooked, or at least with the other third cooked. So we're afraid that a person may grow impulsive and play around with the fire so that the food will get ready more quickly. Now, because of that, we have a major exception to the rule of Shehiyah. And suppose the device has only one heat setting. It's on and it's off, that's it. But yeah, beyond that, you don't have any choice. You don't have high, low, medium, or 17 things in between. So there's no means of raising the temperature if you want to. It's subject to on and off. So then it's agreed by the Poskim that there are no limitations on Shehiyah in such a case. The whole Gzeir is not Shayach in such a case. So somebody even dreamed up an idea. Suppose I put something at the highest setting. So is there also Shama Yechota? So Rav Moshe said Shama Yechota applies. Since it is controllable, you know, this time you happen to be at the highest. A different time you could be at the lowest. It's not Shayach. You know, it's Shayach, the Gzeir, to such a Metzius, to such a device. We'll come to that. We're not up to that yet.
We're on top, right? Because the other thing is,
you
know, out of off, we're talking about electric
clock. Yeah, that's what you use. Yep. Now, the question is, first of all, let's go back a step. Is what exactly is the Gzeira in our circumstances? You know, in the time of the Gemara, it was very simple, it would seem. You had a fire. So you either did something to the coals, eliminated them totally, pushed them to the side where you normally don't keep them, covered them with ash. So where the fire is, and where one could control the fire, were one in the same place. You had to go into the fire and control it. Now we have a bifurcated situation in our situation because we have the fire in one place. But since we're not using solid fuel, the controls are not in the same place. So we have the control in one place and the fire in a different place. So one has to divine what is the principle, what was the Gzeirah of Chazal. It's true. We undoubtedly know if Chazal would come today, they certainly would have made the Gzeirah on the controls. Whether that would have been the whole Gzeirah or included in the Gzeirah, but it certainly would have been included. That's clear. But the issue is, I don't think they would have made a just on that, because listen, you have cases like a fireplace where you just have a fire and no outside control, so they probably would have made both. But what, in fact, did they do? So Rav Moshe Zatzal said, from his perspective, that the Gzeirah is made on the Eish itself. We're the Eishes, that's what the Gzeirah is. The others that did not agree with him, and the view that the handles is necessary to cover, he held it's advisable to cover the handles. It's a good idea, because there is a tzad that you could include that in the Gzeirah, but it's not necessary al pi din to cover the handles. So now we're dealing, the reason for this Gzeirah is I may come to a justifier. That's reason number one for the blech. Reason number two for the blech has to come deal with putting things back on the fire on Shabbos, which I took off the fire on Shabbos. Now that's what we call chazora, returning things to the fire on Shabbos. Now what is the basis of the fact that we need a blech for chazora? So Rabbeinu Tam, it's quoted in the Tor Shulchan Aruch, has a very interesting idea. He says it's really not different than the Friday night gzeirah. It also has to do with the fact that since you took the food off the fire, now you're putting it back. You may be tempted to stir the coals so the food will get, you know, stay good and hot because it just had a time to cool off while you took it off the fire. And the emes is, if you look at the Gemara in the first Amud in Kira, there's a very strong mashmos to Rabbeinu Tam's view because the Gemara says, makes a kol shekein from Shehiyah, Shehiyah's also, and certainly Chazorah's also. Which would tend to indicate that they're both on the same plane. They're both addressing the same issue. Although if they're addressing two different issues, as we're going to see that Rashi and most others learn, then how do you make a kol shekein? from one to the other. And the kol shekein is that normally shehiyah is I put food on the fire before Shabbos, and that's it. I'm not actively engaged. The only question is I may come to be actively engaged, but I'm not actively engaged. So kol shekein in a situation where I'm putting a pot on the food on the fire on Shabbos, that I'm dealing with the fire directly on Shabbos, that I should be concerned that I'm going to adjust the flame. So the Rabbeinu Tam fits very, very well into the Gemara. The Gemara is kol shekein in the Gemara. Rashi does not learn that way, and the halacha principally we've accepted Rashi's reason. And Rashi says this is nothing to do with, ultimately it would seem nothing to do directly with the din of shehiyah, but rather the issue is that it's mechsek mavashel. That let's take get a little perspective. Learning takes place in two ways, as I often say. By experience and by book learning. The fortunate person is the person that is who in his life has both. He has experience. He grew up in an environment where things were done the way they're supposed to be. And then he has book learning to go together with it. Why? Because each one, in fact, has its own limitations. Experience is limited for two reasons. We don't see everything that takes place, number one. Even though it's not private, we just don't see it. It didn't happen in our presence. Secondly, experience cannot ever provide really all the finer details. The general thrust you learn from experience. The finer details is something you have to study carefully. When I just entered Yeshiva Gdeila, I made a very fascinating discovery. And that is that I had many friends who came from the same type of family that I did, a nice, you know, Shomer Shabbos family in New York. The parents are Shomer Shabbos, they grew up Shomer Shabbos. And in many, many, many of their families, their parents never heard of Tefillas Kelim. Just never heard about it. I remember it was almost comical. Some guys, his parents went away for Shabbos, and they got a station wagon, and they loaded up all the kelim and took them to the mikveh, and brought them back, and put everything back where it was. Because it was so bizarre to them, that even if they told their parents about it, the parents would have thought they're nuts. Now, I asked myself, why, what happened? How did this happen? So I realized it's very simple. You know, when their parents were growing up, you know, turn the clock back, say 80 years back, there wasn't too much money around. So their parents didn't buy new dishes and new pots and pans too often. So they didn't have much opportunity ever to see a Tefillas Kelim. And if they did, their father went to the mikveh and toiveled it and brought it home, and they saw a pot coming home. What did they know about it? I remember as a child, I went with my father, Olav HaShalom, to Jamaica Bay to toivel a set of glasses that he bought. So, and I saw the mitzvah firsthand. I don't know what my father learned, maybe from Isaiah. Isaiah was a very learned man. So, but, you know, people didn't know. There was a gap in their experience. They just never saw it taking place, and they never heard of such a thing. That's the problem by learning from experience. Book learning can make up for gaps, and it can also fill in the details. But book learning could also be misconstrued. What we learn and what it actually means to take it from the Shulchan Aruch, from the black and white in the Shulchan Aruch, and to give it shape and form for real life is a big trick. Not so simple. So when the person that's fortunate that has both, he has both experience and the learning from text, so he's able to combine the two. And each one really complements the other. The learning that he learns formally fills in the details and the gaps in his experience. And the experience tends to give form and exactitude to that which he's learned, that he knows what the two are. And if the two don't match up, so then you go to the rub. Do we mess something up along the way? Or is this more to this story than I know until now, which the orphan is? And which accounts for the fact that it doesn't seem that the experience and the sefer don't seem to be on the same page. Because of that, Chazal were always very, very careful that we should not act in a fashion which misleads those that are not super sophisticated. Always were concerned. You know, we have this, for example, in one of the most famous cases in the Gebruch story, those that don't eat Gebruchs. So, one of the reasons for it is, and this is brought interesting, we find this even in Sfardish form. It's not only an Ashkenazi minhag, there are Sfardish communities that have to say even Sfardish, because we're familiar with it as an Ashkenazi minhag, but it happens to be it's in some Sfardish communities they also have the same minhag. And what's the reason that they have it? There was a learned man, and he made matzah milk from his matzahs. So matzah milk wasn't, you know, you didn't have manashevitz in those days, so not everybody had matzah milk. So his neighbor's watching this Talmud Chochem's wife, and she's taking, you know, what looks like flour, and she's making the knedlach, or cake, on Pesach. So the next door neighbor decided, listen, if this learned lady does this, well, listen, I'm no worse than her. If you're allowed to do it, her husband's a Talmud Chochem, so I'll also do it. So she took flour. She didn't realize her neighbor took matzah mel, and there can't be chametz, and she took flour, and she made chametz on Pesach. So, it's one of the reasons they enacted the din of Gebruchs, the minhag of Gebruchs, in some communities. Because people see things, and they're not fully informed. And they wanted both the person himself that's doing to get better insight, his children and his family around him, and others that see what he's doing. So Chazal were concerned that if people come to see us putting things onto the fire on Shabbos, they're not going to be so sophisticated. They're going to say, listen, he's a learned man, and he puts things in the fire on Shabbos, so I'm no different than he is. I also will. That my thing was cooked already, and all 9 yards, and his is wrong. Listen, the details get lost. It's very hard to keep track of the details. So Chazal made a big fuss about Bishul on Shabbos. That's why it's kimat. You know, there are certain malachas that every Yid knows. Anyone that calls himself an observant Jew, you know, you can't carry on Shabbos, you can't cook on Shabbos. A few things, whatever that you know, everybody knows. You can't put the other, you can't light a match on Shabbos. You know, there's a few things that are well known. Many others are not so well known. And they just don't register to people. So Chazal wanted to make a point, to make it very clear that we're not allowed to cook on Shabbos, that no mistake should happen, and this is something that's going to go on constantly. So there's enormous opportunity to make a mistake. It's not something that happens, you know, very infrequently. Someone's going to do this, and I might see it, I might not. This is something that inevitably you're going to see in your life. You're going to see someone take something off the fire and put it back on Shabbos. So if we're not sophisticated, so you know, you're allowed to put things on the fire on Shabbos. Well, what makes us so sure that people know the Malach of Bishul? You know, I saw in my youth people, you know, even learned the Mishnayos that had a fair amount of learning. And Melechas Teuchin somehow never made it on their list. No, anything was wrong with Teuchin. You know, once a Yid Talmud Chacham came and saw them, and he told them he can't do it, and they never did it again for the rest of their life. That's it, you know. No problem, you know. But they just didn't know. So what makes it so obvious that Bishul's going to be also on Shabbos? So Chazal made a whole commotion about the Bishul. So right, the Bishul became a malacha that everybody knows. There are 5 conditions that are necessary to allow one to do chazor, to put things back on the blech on Shabbos. Now, one of them has to do with an af malacha, and 4 of them have to do with the concern of mechzik and mevashel, that we should not misconstrue what's taking place. Condition number 1 is that the food that I took off the fire, I took a pot of food off the fire, and I want to put it back on this Friday night, Shabbos day, has to be fully cooked. That's rather obvious, because if it's not fully cooked, then I'm not dealing with, it looks like I'm cooking, then I'm actually cooking on Shabbos. So that they didn't want, so that certainly we have to be careful that we're not actually cooking. Then they made 4 additional conditions. What is fully cooked? Good question. It happens to be that, as Yaakov pointed out, when something reaches Michael ben Rousseau, let's call it for our purposes for right now, half-cooked. It's edible as a cooked item. Does that remove the din bishul from it or not? touches a lot of issues. The Rebbe removed the Din Bishul from it. So the Gemara, in fact, does not spell out the Din. And there's a broad machlokes Rishonim what the halacha is. There's a whole camp of Rishonim that say Bishul ends at Michael ben Rasoi, and everything beyond that is just improving the taste, but not Bishul. And there's another school of thought in the Rishonim that says that until it's soft through and through, that's real Bishul. We're not just dealing with improving the taste. And the halacha were machmer, because of a sofik deraisa, were machmer like the shita, that it has to be cooked through and through. So if it's Michael ben Rusoi, we're not allowed to put it back on the blech on Shabbos.
She is a different
Shia, I'm not cooking. I did it before Shabbos. That's all. Shia is what am I... Do I have an urgent need to fool around with the fire so that I can eat? So if you want to gain some perspective on it, I'm going to call up your mother and tell her to make sure the food's not ready till 11 o'clock this coming Friday night. We'll see what happens. So that's fully cooked means it's soft through and through. So, okay, so that probably is not considered up. We didn't fully cook it.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I agree.
Even if continued cooking would make it even better?
Yes, even if continued cooking improves the taste, that's not a Bishul issue. It's a different type of issue. Now, let's just go back one step. So, I don't know if I mentioned the... See, here's a divide on that issue between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. Ashkenazim, according to the way we paskin, that once it reaches Michael and Rasoi, we're not concerned anymore that I'm going to fool around with it. It's edible. I can eat. According to Sfarad Shashita, which follows the other Tana and the Gemara, as long as the flavor is getting better, then there's still a concern that I may come to a justifier. So there are two perspectives. That is an issue, how to look at the cooking from Michael ben Rusoi and on, is a very interesting issue, because you find the same issue in terms of the Machlekes, the Mechaber, and the Ramah, and the Halachas of Bishul Akum, or the Dinas. So a Yid, if a Yid contributes to the cooking, so it removes Bishul Akum. Let's say the food is already Michael ben Rusoi, and then the Yid comes in and finds the food at Michael ben Rusoi, so he whips it off the fire and he puts it back. So the last half of Bishul was done by the Yid. The first half was done by the non-Jew. What's the din?
That's only Ashkenazi also, isn't it?
No.
Sfardi,
so same thing. Because if it was less than Michael ben Rusoi...
No, what I meant is the Sfardi doesn't want to go cooking.
That's on the other hand. It happened. The Maisa Shoy, he came and he put it on the fire.
Good.
So if, according to a Sfardi, it came before it's Michael ben Rusoi and he took it off and he put it back, it's kosher. According to the Mechaber, once it reached Michael ben Rusoi, his goose is cooked. That's it. You can't remove the Din Bishul Akum anymore. The Ramah says, as long as it's not fully cooked, you can still save the day. So we have a divide between Ashkenazim and Sfardim also on the limitations between Michael ben Rusoi and fully cooked.
So the Ramah will let you get away with the Yid lighting the fire.
That's another thing. What? Let's say he didn't light the fire.
Well, then the Sfardi wouldn't allow it.
It did it. Let us just, the question is what happened. Can you save the situation still? It happened. You came home, your non-Jewish maid lit the fire, she put the food on the fire, and it's not Michael ben Rusoi.
It's
for the oven. You can, according to the Sfardi, you can pull it off the fire and put it back, and you saved.
So the Sfardi and Machmer on both ends, because for Shia, they hold it has to be mamish cooked through also, right?
Yes. Yeah, but that's not because of Bishul. No, it doesn't even help. As long as the flavor is getting better, even if it's past Bishul, there's still Machmer. Different issue. What's up, Menachem? I see something's on your mind.
Nothing. You're Makel. There's a certain Makel by Bishul Akum in this case.
No, the Sfardim are Machmer. The Sfardim say that once it hit Michael ben Rusoi, you can't save the day anymore. Yes, the Ashkenazim allowed it. We got to do that. And these in Yonam, the Ashkenazim are much more makel than the Sfardim across the board, for whatever the reasons. I don't know why it came to be, but that's what came to be. So we're dealing. So when we talk it now, we have four additional conditions of Chazar. Now, those additional conditions of Chazar all center around making it clear that I'm not cooking. So what are the conditions? Number one is that we have to have a blech. So the fire is already not in the conventional manner. Something fishy is going on here. So once there's a hecker, something's taking place. This is out of it's extraordinary, the circumstances, number one. So in life, if you see something extraordinary, you're liable to ask a question about it. If you came out of shul and you saw three cats in the middle of the street, you wouldn't think twice about it. If you came outside and you saw three elephants in the corner of 147th and 73rd, it would catch our attention. It's just, you know, the blech, this contraption doesn't belong here. Like, what's it here? It proclaims there's something special going on. Now, the basic idea of Chazara is that it's a continuation of the circumstance that was here before. That I'm not doing anything new. This circumstance, the bishul was taking place, and this is just merely returning something to where it was before. I'm not starting anything new. And those are the three conditions. The conditions are that it did not return to room temperature, because if it returns to room temperature, then it's cold. So nothing indicates that this is a continuation of what was here before. If it's still hot, so you see, it's just off the stove, it's steaming away, number one. Two further conditions that you have in mind to put it back when you took it off. And finally, that you have it in your hand still. So all of those lend themselves, emphasize the fact that this is merely a continuation of the circumstance which existed before. Oh, so we're getting, ovens are problematic, but we'll come to ovens. Let's deal with stoves. Because, so, the norm is it has to be on the fire as Shabbos begins. At the beginning of Ben Hashmoshes. Now there's an important step here. See, number one is that something to constitute a blech. So you said, since we said that what's a blech? According to all views, a blech is some type of hecker. It's a differentiation from the norm that takes place. So whether it's just merely that it's different, or it's different by making everything cooler, whatever the sheet is, we went through, explored Rashi and Tosis and the Rashi before, but it's differentiation. So the Chofetz Chaim points out, suppose I have a situation where the fire is covered, and yet it's not differentiated from the normal mode of operation. What's the din? So the Chofetz Chaim says it would not suffice as a blech. A blech necessitates something different than I do during the weekdays. Now, from that standpoint, we could examine, for example, let's say you take a Shabbos platter. So it's all, nobody can see the flame. If you want to see the flame, you'd have to take the whole thing apart and look at the coals inside. Right? A crack pot, you don't see the coils, the hot coils. So, does that constitute a blech? It's covered. It's true, it's covered. But it's covered on Monday and Tuesday too, in the same fashion. So that doesn't constitute a blech. Now you have the same thing, for example, in commercial ovens. If you're familiar with commercial ovens, in commercial ovens, sometimes you have burners, as you have at home, like in the gas range, and sometimes you just have a flat metal top. It's just a piece of steel, or two pieces of steel, which go across the whole top of the oven. The flames fan out underneath to heat the metal, and you could put pots all over the place. There are no burners. The whole thing is heated by fire which is underneath. So the fire is always covered there. You never see the fire. But it's not a hecker. So this is a very important step that the Chofetz Chaim makes, that it has to be differentiated from that which we do during the week.
Would it help if you never use that crack pot except for Shabbos?
I don't think so. Since it is subject to the din of the din of Chazara, and it's not in and of itself differentiated, I don't think that I have, you know, I was Mechadish, I told you, the blech of the 21st century. You know, I'll use 18th, 19th, 20th century technology. This is at least the latter part of the 20th century. Maybe we'll make it the blech of the 21st century. But I'm going to take a psychedelic ball and it's going to reflect the lights with strobe lights. You know, you're going to get all the psychedelic lights flashing all over your kitchen Friday night. You know, we'll have it on with a computerized, so it'll go on, we'll scan in all the lecht benches, we'll know when to go on, it'll go off, you know, and then when morning comes, believe me, you'll never forget that it's Friday night in your house with this. Better than any lecht that anyone ever made. But it won't work, because it's not consistent with the takanos that Chazal made.
This is equally a problem for Shia and Chazara?
Yes.
So what do you do with, how do you make a lecht for a crock pot?
How do you make a lecht for a crock pot? Well, if you have a two-piece crock pot, it's simple enough. You line the whole, the heating pot, line it all the way on the bottom, the sides, and it should come out a little bit, even when you put the pot in, the foil should stick out from the seam.
All around.
Yes. That's a blech.
Removing the knob does not...
Removing the knob, according to most poskim, I don't say... Rabbi Yosef did not like it. Okay, there's some machlokes about it, for an outside reason, if it worked or didn't work, or Rabbi Yosef felt it was not consistent with the takanah of Chazal. So it's certainly not a lechat chila. There are poskim that held that that you could do such a thing. I believe that Rav Scheinberg held that way for, and he had whatever he tined that it's approximates one of the other takonas that we find.
But what you just described, how are you going to get the food onto the plate? Would you want to take the entire thing out and put something else in empty?
Yeah, oh, so we'll come to that. Okay. We're not. Thank you. You're giving me all the teleprompts for my share.
I might do this already, and I may have forgotten it.
Okay. So. Chazorah is to make clear that Bishul, you can't do Bishul on Shabbos. Now, there's a whole strange problem that it's really even hard to get the full grip on this problem. But let's do this in two steps. Since the problem is to differentiate from the normal mode in which I do it during the weekday, so the Rashba came along, and the Rashba had a grand idea. A grand idea, the Rashba. Not a Gemara, it's a Rashba. The Rashba said, let's say I have a pot of food on the fire, and I put another pot of food on top of the first pot. He says, I never saw anybody's wife cooking this way, the Rashba said. It hasn't happened yet. So Mela, the Rashba said, that's there's no issue of Chazor in such a case. Because it's clearly not Mechseke Mavasha, because nobody's Mavasha like this. So we have a lot of applications which are clear-cut, and we have controversial applications of the Rashba's din. When I lived in East New York, in the Kitna Shtiebel, on Blake Avenue, so, you know, everything in the shul took place in one room. That's all there was. The basement was a basement. It's not a place that was used for storage. It was a family that lived upstairs. So everything in the shul took place in the shul. If you daven in the shul, you learned in the shul, there was shirim in the shul, and you had kiddush in the shul. Everything was in the shul, shtiebel style. Now, how did they warm up the kugels? Oh, I still smell the aroma. I can still feel the aroma of the kugels, the potato kugel. So they put them, they had gas radiators. The building was heated by gas. They had gas radiators. The gas radiators, I think even they had their own flame in each one, if I remember correctly. They had gas radiators. They used to put the kugels on the gas radiators. And by the time Musaf was ending, So, al pidin it's mutter, why? Because no one ever cooks in such fashion. So there's no mechsekim of ashel.
But it was room temperature when it started. Isn't that an additional condition that it can't be room temperature?
I'm not doing chazor because I put it in a place which has no shaychus to bishul.
So that's better than one.
Yes, correct.
How about a pot on top of the oven?
We'll come. Let's go one step at a time. So this is another application of the Rashba that is not mechsekim of ashel. Nobody cooks like this. So it can't be mechsekim of ashel. Now, the Shaila is like this. So if we said that the blech constitutes a hecker, and therefore I'm allowed to do chazorah on it on Shabbos. So why exactly can't I? Why exactly can't I put a take a pot of food out of the refrigerator, put it directly onto the blech on Shabbos? Now, it's the kasha is not such a good kasha for a certain reason, for a reason that I'll tell you, because I don't believe, in other words, in any of the situations in the Gemara where I did goro for kotum, I'm only allowed to take out a pot of food that was in the oven and put it back inside. I couldn't take a pot of food which wasn't in there altogether and put it in. So in other words, even though I fulfilled goro for kotum, you can still have a violation of putting it onto the fire on Shabbos. It only allows me to continue that which was there before. So you see, even in the din of the Gemara, it's not just because I filled the hecker enough to allow me to put something back, it doesn't allow me to put something on in the first place. So what happened was like this. There was a debate among very gdolim in the early part of the 20th century. If you're allowed to take your potato kugel out of the fridge and put it right onto the blech, Shabbos in the morning. Some considered it so significantly different than the norms of Bishul that you're allowed to do so. And some said it's not sufficiently different, and maybe because of the fact that there are some like flat-topped stoves which are in fact covered. So, and you see in the Gemara, in fact, that even after you did Goro for Kotum, didn't allow you to put something directly in back in the oven. So that's the view that prevailed. The view that prevailed, or Moshe Zatzal and others, the view that prevailed in the 20th century throughout the world is that you cannot take things out of the fridge and put them directly onto the blech.
These were things that had been on the blech when
Shabbos. No.
So, but if I did have something that was had been on the blech when
Shabbos. That's enough, but now if
I
you.
Put that in the fridge.
No, there wouldn't be mutter. Now it cooled off completely,
yeah.
So you wouldn't be able to. It wouldn't change. That would not be a material difference if it had been on the blech or not. Now that it cooled off completely.
Sorry, but I could use the upside down pot.
Oh, well, not it. Okay. Why? Let's go.
I think I have a discussion. If you said you needed those three or four conditions, so you didn't have those conditions.
Well, the question was, is this so differentiated from the norm that it's like the Rashba's didn't apply here or not?
Maybe so, it does not room temperature.
Correct.
The hecker, you don't need that.
Maybe you don't need a hecker. Maybe, in other words, it's so different than the norm that it doesn't need the conditions, like the Rashba's Kliya Gabe Kliya, putting on the radiator. This was the debate, but the view that prevailed is that you need the conditions, and it's problematic. So what emerged from this? What emerged from this, and it's interesting, this is, you know, results from the fact, from the world of learning, that people learned. This was not from the world of experience. In my youth, I never saw a Kli Agave Kli. Never saw such a thing. No, never saw it. It's a Rashba, it's a Din of the Shulchan Aruch, it's all fine. It's not a Din, nobody, whatever the reasons, it wasn't the norm. And nobody was familiar with it. This is something which emerged from the world of learning. As people went to the yeshivas and they started to learn the Shulchan Aruch line by line. This is a din, yeah, it's such a din and whatever. Found out it's for real. It's a real din. And so we have a halacha of Kli Agabe Kli, which came from the Rashba. Now, so there are a number of issues which revolve around Kli Agabe Kli. So let's take a little bit, a look at some of them. One is, what happens if the bottom pot is empty? There's nothing. You have an empty pot on the bottom. So there is a prima godim that wants to argue that Kli Agabe Kli only works when the bottom pot is full. If the bottom pot is an empty pot, that is not considered Kli Agabe Kli. And there is such, in fact, there is a stira in the Shulchan Aruch that he wants to answer with this. And the Chofetz Chaim does cite it at the Bi'ur HaLacha. So now there's a contemporary machlokes which takes place. In our situation with a blech, should we apply the standard of the prima godim that the bottom pot has to have food, or it doesn't have to have it? So, and we have machmirim and mekilim in today's world in this shaila. Rav Herschel Shechter, from what I know, will not allow you to do any of the places under the OU to do this, to put a kli agabe kli when the bottom kli is empty. Others.
What's the reason why the bottom kli is not?
I guess because maybe they consider that that's like direct exposure to the fire because there's nothing really being mafsikin, but I presume that's the svar. There is such a prima god.
But did mafsikin even hold that you need a pot on top of a clear?
I don't know which way. He might have held the other way in this machlokes, but that's not what's makubal in the world. So he has to live, you know, as I say, he might have very well been one of the ones that held on the other side.
No, not sure.
To say Tover was shepherd is crazy.
So I'll call upon him. Others have disagreed with it, and I'm one of the ones that disagrees. Because since there's a blech, there's a dayenu that we're machmer not to put things on the blech altogether, but to impose noch a chumra on top of the blech of kli agav a kli with an empty kli when there's already a real blech in this dayenu. Too many chumras piled on one on top of the other. So that's one of the issues that exists. That is a very complex issue which is really divided. I mean, the Rabbah, contemporary Rabbonim, which has to do with, and the truth is, Rav Moshe himself, in his written works, he sort of straddled the issue a little bit. You know, in written works, he took one line, others say that verbally he was a little bit more lenient. The question is, let's say, do you have with a hot plate or a warming drawer, is there an issue of mechseka mevashel? And we have the same thing, for example, with the hot boxes that we have here. For the kiddush, you let it put things in. You're certainly not going to succeed in cooking something in those things. That's without, you know, but they are yatzo lettuce. So where does that leave us? You know, in other words, because some things you could cook in them, but most things, you know, you're not really used for that particular purpose. But they do reach yatzo lettuce, and it's made to put food into. So where do we come out? So most of the world has come out not to put things into the hot boxes on Shabbos. That's pretty much the, you know, the standard. Not everyone. Now, and then so how do you deal with a hot plate? So Rav Moshe the Tshuva wrote that if it reaches yatzo lettuce, it's osur. Some want to say that he really held he was, you know, man to man, he was more meikel, that it has to be something that could cook, that not yatzo lettuce, but he didn't want to articulate a standard, you know, as lenient as that. So you have the problem with the warming drawers. Now the warming drawers have any number of settings. The highest setting is at 210 degrees. So it's certainly way past yatzo lettuce. So again, so here we have a great debate among contemporary rabbonim, you know, if it's mutter, if it's osur.
Would they have been mocking on the radiators
then? The radiators, I guess, which were not designed for food altogether, I don't think they would have been machmer. I think that's part of the consideration, that this is so some type of cooking device. You know, the radiator was, I think, muskum, that's beyond the pale. Just because it wasn't intended for this purpose altogether. So there's a big machlokes about it. I'm among those that are machmer, but Lamai said there is a big machlokes about this, how to evaluate this type of case. So we have a lot of situations in the contemporary scene which you could argue, you know, different sides of.
Would an upside down foil pan suffice for the bottom clay being empty?
Yes. Yes.
That's anywhere on the block, even over the fire.
Yes.
Has it been an empty clay?
An empty foil pan is an empty clay. I think so. There were all of this. So these are the two basic reasons that we have the blech. Not to adjust the fire, and to make it clear when we come to put things back on the fire that we're not violating Bishop. Question?
The hot boxes, some of them don't have any controls.
Yeah, that would only help for Shahiyah, not for Chazor. But the contemporary, most of the hot boxes have adjustments like from 0 to 10, you know, that they have nowadays. But that does not affect putting things back into it.
Let's assume I have
four gas burners, one of them is on, black covers all the burners.
Yeah.
I come home from shul and I see that some of the food, everything was fully cooked before Shabbos, you know,
yeah.
But everything may have been at room temperature when I put it on the black before Shabbos, but everything had been fully cooked. I see that, for example, the food that's right on top of the black is absolutely fine and hot. Can I move, without lifting it, can I move other food closer to that flame?
Yes. You're dealing with solids.
Yes, absolutely.
Wait, just a minute. My father's been doing this for decades. He's got one flame under the block,
yeah.
And he's got the hot water pot over here. And it's, now I'm afraid to ask.
You don't have to. Listen, according to that, we'll see.
Okay.
If you're a Sephardi, you can get yourself in trouble. Ashkenazim are not going to get in trouble with this halacha.
But one should be sliding it rather than lifting it?
No, you could. If they're fully cooked, you could pick it up to remove it.
Okay.
Ramosha was relatively makel. Anything which is on the blech and somewhat warm is considered ala ish. There are those that say that it has to be yatzo leathers, so
okay.
The truth is, it's better if you could make
it. I've got to re-ask the question. Apparently I didn't ask it. We're talking about a hot water pot that you're using for coffee, right?
Yes.
So he's got that over the not as hot part on
yep.
The left.
I understand what he does.
Because Ronnie thought that I didn't worry about
it. He said it wasn't hot, the water.
I don't know. It must have been at least warm. Any place on the block is going to be a little warm.
He sure boiled it before Shabbos. Like every fine Jew does, you know.
The solids.
We're dealing with solids, and in this case of liquids is also fine, but we'll come to that. All right, the solids are easier to deal with. I don't want to.
Liquids are fine even though the pot that's not, the water pot that's not on the fire is no longer hot?
We'll get to that. Of course, if you're an Ashkenazi, I don't see, in this chair, I don't see any Sephardim. No, I'm sorry, one is here. My mistake. So the Sephardim have a problem with that. The Sephardim have to make sure the fire is either high or they have more than one fire, or they get themselves something like I have a copper blech, and it conducts the heat very, very well. I once bought it in there to saw I got stopped by security because they couldn't figure out what this was when the x-ray machine inside my valise on the way out of the country. So they pulled me over and they opened it up. It was okay. Once they saw it, they let me go. But we'll see. That's a prat and bishul. We'll come to this. An afkamina between an ein bishul and a bishul by a liquid between Sephardim and Ashkenazim. But we're not ready for that yet. That's ahead of us.
So the idea of taking out the kugel from the fridge, so you could put that on top of the empty foil pan.
Yes.
What about the blech itself? I mean, on top of the flame, is it there sweet on top of the flame?
Not in this regard, no. There are some other differences, but they're not.
I have the foil pan over here, and I can put my kugels on top, but I can't take other kugels and put them on the other parts of the blech.
No, you may not.
That's
right. Good. So until now, basically, we're dealing with the gzeiros that surround the matters of bishul on Shabbos. But we haven't really addressed bishul itself. We have to define what is bishul, when is the bishul, when isn't the bishul. And that's not a simple matter, because as we pointed out, we have a machlokes, if bishul ends at Michael ben Dressoi, half cooked, or it's not, it has to be soft through and through to remove the din bishul. And that's a deraisa dika machlokes. That's number one. Now, what we need to understand is the following, that in practical terms, there's an essential difference between cooking solids and cooking liquids. You cook a piece of meat or a potato, even if it gets cold, it's still cooked. That you can't do anything about. The guy that figures out how to zap this thing and make it back to uncooked is going to be Warren Buffett and Bill Gates together to come to his door to ask, you know, for his financial help. You know, imagine you cook chicken, it's extra. Zap it, and that's raw again, you put it back in the freezer, take it out next week, you know. It changed the whole face of food in the entire world. So whoever figures it out is going to become a billionaire that like Natchayach. Peerless. But as the world exists, bishul of a salad cannot be undone. You cooked it, it's a cooked piece of meat, a cooked piece of chicken, a cooked potato. A liquid you cook, you boil water. What happens after you close the fire? Half an hour later? It's cold. Is there any substantive difference between this and the water that you started with. Other than that, maybe you killed some bacteria along the way, but other than that, there's no difference between what
there
you started with.
I mean, you boil a chicken soup, you know, it's very...
That's different, because but you've done two separate things. You've dissolved solids into the liquid, so that you have. That's not going away, because you cooked the solids. You dissolved the vegetables. Those are cooked, and those remain cooked. And it's mixed together with the water. But the water in and of itself, the liquid, nothing changed in the liquid. You might have put more stuff into the liquid, and that stuff is cooked, yeah, you're right, from the solids that I put in. But the water itself just goes back to where it was. So this is a whole commotion. In the Shas we find, of Kuf Mem Hei Amud Beis and Masechta Shabbos, that when it comes to solids, clearly there's ein bishul acha bishul. There's no double jeopardy. You can only cook something once. Now, what happens when it comes to liquids? The posh of the seichel, and that's really what the mechaber, the Rav Yosef Kairo Paskins, the posh of the seichel should be that by liquids there should be bishul acha bishul. That's it. You close the electric coffee maker, you come back tomorrow morning, you have to cook it again. That's it. It's cold water. Nothing here. So this is the position of the Mechaber. Now, but this is not only a Sfardi Ashkenazi Machlaikis, because really what happens is that the Magid Mishnah is a Sfardi, and he brings the Rajba, all Sfardim. So the Sfardim themselves had their own slugfest on this one, but the Mechaber passing like the sheet of the Machmirim. The Ramah quoted the Magid Mishnah in the name of the Rashba, that so by salads everyone agrees. That's a dinner to Gemara. Ain bishul acha bishul. We'll see its implications soon. By liquids, so the Mechaber holds there is bishul acha bishul. And the Ramah quoting the Magid Mishnah, all Sfarish Poskim in the name of the Rashba, says there's no bishul acha bishul even by liquids. Why that's the case is confounding. Why that should be, what the seichel of that position is, not clear cut. But that's what his position. Then the Ramah came along, and the Ramah added a chumrah to this. The Ramah said, even though the Magid Mishnah and the Rashba's name says that this ain't bishul acha bishul even by liquids, but if they return to room temperature, then we'll machmer. It has to be that you would consider it still to be warm water. You would classify it as warm water. Now here's a major divide between the Sfardim and the Ashkenazim, and we'll see it's not only between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. Well, first we'll deal with the Psak that's Mekubal broadly, and then we'll add a little to it. What's Mekubal broadly, what's Mekubal broadly is the following. According to Ashkenaz, Sfardim, if you have hot water, and you put it on the blech, and it goes under Yad Soledis, then you cannot put it back on a place on the blech, which will bring it above Yad Soledis, and if you do, you violate Bishul on Shabbos. According to the Ashkenazim, as long as it's still classified as warm water, there's no problem putting it back in the hottest part of the blech. And you'll wait 15 minutes and it'll be boiling away again. Fine, no problem. You're allowed to do it. Now, I said what complicates this, not in the halacha lemaisa, because we're not noyig like this, the Vilna Gaon, so now is the first, you know, where the Ramah was the first Ashkenazi in the story, and the Vilna Gaon is the second Ashkenazi in the story. And the Vilna Gaon says by him it's a sfeika de dinner. He's not convinced who's right between the Shita that Yosef brings and the Magid Mishnah in the name of the Rashba. Who's right? And the Gaon says it's a sfeika de dinner. So the world has not been mekabel. So according to the Gaon, it would come out even for the Ashkenazim. There's a reason to see that you keep it above Yad Soledis. But the world has not really been mekabel the gross chumrah. But I bestabber there must be some that follow the Derech HaGroh that are knowing that in that particular fashion. So here's what I told you, where there's a difference between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. In other words, when it comes to Bishul, Achar Bishul, by liquids, but as Sfardim, you really have to make sure, if you want to have good hot water on Shabbos, that the hot water is close enough to the fire that it stays above Yad Soledis. And we Ashkenazim, we're not so concerned, as long as, you know, we're talking obviously that we cooked it, we boiled it up before Shabbos. And afterwards, now it's on the blech, and it's, you know, it's a little from the far reaches of the blech, downtown. So it's, you know, it cools off as time goes on. You know, sometimes you come in the morning, you left it too far from the fire overnight, so you put it back where the fire is. It's a little warmish, and you 15 minutes later, it's chugging away, and then you're ready for a coffee, you know. So this is a major divide on this point between Sfardim and Ashkenaz. Okay, we'll hold it at this point, Rabbi Yisai.
When they talk about the solids, every solid has some moisture in it.
Yeah, if it's not nicker, we're not concerned. Once it's cooked already, once it was cooked already, we're not concerned unless the liquid is nicker.
So,
listen, even a matzah. Matzah has liquid in it.
Really?
Of course.
It's not a bad thing.